nos manejan mal.
Dame, 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 dame todo el power para que te demos en la madre. Gimme, 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 gimme todo el poder so I can come around to joder. Dame, 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 dame todo el power para que te demos en la madre. Gimme, 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 gimme todo el poder so I can come around to joder. Dame, 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 dame todo el poder.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is George Grayson, who's a professor of comparative politics at the College of William and Mary. He has written more than 20 books, including The North American Free Trade Agreement, Regional Community, and The New World Order, Oil and Mexican Foreign Policy, Mexican Messiah, Andres Manuel López Obrador. And his latest book is The Executioner's Men, Los Zetas, Rogue Soldiers, Criminal Entrepreneurs, and the Shadow State They Created. He is a scholar of the Foreign Policy Research Institute and writes a weekly column for the Mexican magazine Milenio Semanal. Welcome to Background Briefing, George Grayson.
Very nice to be with you.
And tell us about the role of how much the war on drugs, brutal and bloody as it is in Mexico, with up to 60,000 casualties so far of the war on drugs, which is largely to do with American consumption, but the Mexicans are really the ones that are fighting and dying in this war on drugs. And of course, not only do we consume the drugs here in the United States, we also provide the firearms with which the Mexican cartels murdering each other and innocent civilians. I take it, though, that in this particular election, more pocketbook issues are dominating, not the war on drugs.
No, the number one issue are the drug-related deaths. And that's been the kiss of death for the National Action Party, the PAN, which is the party of outgoing President Felipe Calderón. His party's been in power 12 years, and the people now want change, 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 and they want a mitigation, if not the end, to the bloodshed.
So you're saying that pocketbook issues aren't dominating, that the war on drugs is really the key issue?
Well, pocketbook issues come in a close second, because despite the fact that there has been economic stability during the PAN 12-year rule, people know that the income distribution is highly skewed, and about a third of the population live as old rag pickers in fetid slums. And those people are going to vote against the PAN and probably vote for the PRI, which was once the dominant party in the country for 71 years until the PAN took power in 2000.
So is this a case of the failure of the PAN? They replaced the 71-year rule of the PRI. There was a lot of hope and expectation with Vicente Fox. He, of course, addressing the one-third of the population that live in poverty that you just referenced, George Grayson, he promised to create 10 million new jobs. And, of course, the joke became, he sure created 10 million new jobs, Vicente Fox. The only problem was they were all in America because there was a massive exodus. So tell me about how much what's happening today in Mexico is a result of the failure of the PAN to deliver.
That's the perception. And it turned out that Fox was a great campaigner, but that he couldn't organize a one-car funeral. And there were great expectations when Felipe Calderón won 6 years ago because he was a much more experienced politician. But he has handled the economic issues well, but it is virtually impossible to win a drug war unless you've got the full cooperation of the country's elite, and that hasn't been forthcoming.
Well, there's an expectation, is there not, that if the PRI wins, and there's more than just the presidential elections, there's the Congress and six of 31 governorships, which are very key in Mexico. The expectation is that the PRI will make a deal with the cartels.
The PRI can't make a national deal as they used to do 20 or 25 years ago because there are too many cartels now. But I wouldn't be surprised if many of the 23 governors who up to this date have often worked hand in glove with the cartels or have turned a blind eye to the cartel violence, I suspect many of them will reach some kind of local accords.
So is there any way then obviously that I mentioned the war on drugs being largely an American problem in as much as where the destination of these drugs, because it's American drug consumers that are driving the market. We also have, of course, this situation here in the United States where there's virtually no gun control, particularly in Arizona and the border states, where massive amounts of firearms across the border. We've had this absolutely absurd and obscene theater at the United States Congress where the Attorney General, there was a vote to hold him in contempt of Congress organized by the NRA, the very people who have stripped any meaningful gun laws out to the point where guns flow across the border, you know, 50 caliber sniper rifles, machine guns, AK-47s, you name it, unfettered. So from the Mexican point of view, they feel pretty burned up. And you mentioned Calderon, the outgoing president. He spoke very passionately to the United States Congress, the very same body that just voted in this this piece of absurd theater to hold the Attorney General in contempt. He spoke very passionately to the same body, and obviously they didn't listen.
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. The NRA and its 20 allied groups are a political powerhouse, and so we're not going to get strict curbs on gun flows. But even if you stopped every weapon crossing the border into Mexico, the cartels have sufficient funds to buy arms on the international market. The Chinese, for example, make an excellent knockoff of the AK-47. So it would be a thorn in the side, but not a bullet in the heart, if the flow of guns north to south were terminated.
So is there therefore no solution apart from the fact that the American consumers give up drugs, which is highly unlikely?
Well, it's going to have to be Mexican leadership. The U.S. can only do so much to help with the local war against drugs here. And we can offer technical assistance, intelligence, and some hardware. But the Mexicans are going to have to rein in their governors, who are often accomplices in the drug trade. They're going to have to crack down on money laundering, because you can buy just about anything with cash here. And they're also going to have to develop more professional law enforcement bodies, because there are virtually no honest police in Mexico. So we bear part of the blame, but the Mexicans have to take the lead in reducing the bloodshed.
Well, there's an expression, I believe, in Mexico, plomo y plata, which means silver or lead. In other words, you take a bribe or you take a bullet. And if you're a law enforcement officer in Mexico, underpaid in a country that is poor and that where the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, you can understand the temptation that the choice is either you take a lot of money, the more you could ever earn legitimately from the cartel, to buy protection and to serve their interests, or alternatively, if you're an honest and courageous policeman, you're likely to get killed. I mean, it's pretty grim, isn't it?
You know, the hope is that back in the old days of the pre, there were constraints on the drug capos. That is, they were allowed to conduct their business, but if they broke unwritten rules of the game, that the shadowy forces from Mexico City would come down on them like a ton of bricks. Now, because so many of the governors are complicit in the drug trade, it's going to be incumbent upon Peña Nieto, if he does emerge as president of the PRI, to rein in the 20 PRI governors and make it clear to them that cooperation with the cartels is absolutely unacceptable.
But the group that you've just written about, George Grayson, in your new book, The Executioner's Men, Los Zetas, Rogue Soldiers, Criminal Entrepreneurs, and the Shadow State They've Created, the Zetas, they come out of military intelligence, and a lot of them are former police officers. They have literally pushed the envelope in terms of brutality to the points of incomprehensibility. I mean, you can't put that kind of violence back in a bottle, can you?
Absolutely not. And even if you eliminated the drug trafficking completely, groups like Los Zetas have become experts in kidnapping, in extortion, in smuggling immigrants into the United States, in money laundering, in loan sharking, in prostitution. So there's a sublayer of criminality that will exist even if the Virgin of Guadalupe should reappear and the cartels should no longer be able to export their products.
So how does Mexico's elite, one of the richest men in the world, Carlos Slim Alou, is a Mexican businessman who owns the telephone and media and internet monopoly. How do the elite, the oligarchs who are backing Peña Nieto and the media, Televisa and Azteca are their mouthpiece, how do they feel about this country of theirs that is being racked by this kind of brutal crime? I mean, they all have bodyguards, but you'd think that somewhere in their souls they would recognize that this is no way to live.
What we found in Colombia was the elite were also cocooned, thanks to bodyguards, sophisticated electronic security devices, skilled drivers, sending their children abroad to study, and sometimes operating their business from the United States. It was only when the Medellin cartel in Colombia moved from criminal violence to terrorism, that is, bombing shopping centers, shooting planes out of the air, killing a presidential candidate, that the elite had an epiphany, that they had a stake in fighting organized crime. Now, the elite in the north, in cities like Monterrey, has had this epiphany, but it still hasn't occurred with regard to the well-to-do in Mexico City, Guadalajara, Cuernavaca, and in other cities. And they really have to commit themselves to fighting organized crime.
Well, George Grayson, it's a pretty grim picture, don't you think? And this election might end up, if indeed it goes as planned, if I can use that word, with the pre-taking over, it's not likely to get better. I thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with George Grayson. He's a professor of comparative politics at the College of William and Mary. He's written more than 20 books, including The North American Free Trade Agreement, Regional Community, and The New World Order, Oil and Mexican Foreign Policy, Mexican Messiah, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, and his latest, The Executioner's Men, Los Zetas, Rogue Soldiers, Criminal Entrepreneurs, and the Shadow State They Created. He is a scholar of the Foreign Policy Research Institute and writes a weekly column for the Mexican magazine Milenio Semanal.